Good morning.
Good morning. This is Will Finney from Tax Advisors for Tri-City Retirement.
Hello. You said your name was Will Finney?
Yes.
Can I ask how you spell your last name, Mr. Finney?
Sure. It's P as in Peter, H-I-N-N-E-Y.
Perfect. Thank you very much. My name is Amanda. I'm going to just go ahead and get started with the hearing this morning. Welcome to the Board of Equalization. Today is Thursday, November 7th. The time is now 10:02. We have petition number BE 2019-37, parcel number 119290055. Owner is Tri-Cities Retirement LLC, and we have Mr. Finney representing them over the phone today. We also have Mickey Morgan and Penny Ho representing the assessor's office. This is a commercial parcel. The petition is scheduled for 30 minutes. The appellant and the appraiser will each have 10 minutes to highlight points of the evidence they have provided. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions from the board.
Good morning. Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Gregory Garcia, Joe Chris, and me, Alicia Greenway, as chairman. The clerk is Amanda Pearson. The board is quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with the powers that are somewhat extended judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our roles is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you now to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Following your hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you shall receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and the notice of appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documentary data provided by you in the assessor's office. We have reviewed it. The appellant will present your case first, and then the assessor will present her case. Please begin with your presentation of your case, Mr. Finney.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. So what we're dealing with here today is Tri-City Retirement. It is an assisted living and memory care facility located in Pasco, and it is a property that has 50,494 square feet of building area. It's located on 2.41 acres. It has 81 units and 92 beds. Some of the memory care rooms are double occupancy. So what I'd like to do is in the time that we have is just to go through and point out the information that I provided to you. I know it's a lot, but I wanted to go over that with you. We have provided an analysis that looks at all three approaches to value, cost, income, and sales comparison. We have ended up reconciling to the cost value. And one of the reasons for that is the nature of this property. As an assisted living memory care facility, it has unique characteristics, and some of those involve business value. And under Washington law, the true and fair value of property is only the value of the real property. It does not include business, property, intangibles, or personal property. And so part of the problem with these facilities is they are very, very intangible intensive. And by that I mean they provide food services, they provide nursing services, all these types of things, activities, all these things that are not directly related to the real property. In most jurisdictions, the assessing authorities acknowledge that somewhere between 50 and 70% of the value is in the intangibles. And so estimating that becomes problematic. The cost approach doesn't have that problem because we're only looking at the real property. And so we tend to rely a little more heavily on that than certainly the market approach, because the market approach you need to make business value deductions, which is difficult. But also, we do look at the income approach, and that's because the investors that are buying and selling these properties rely primarily on the income approach. You have a summary of our presentation in Exhibit P1. I won't go through that in detail, but it outlines the steps we took to do the different approaches to value. The Exhibit P2 has general information about the property. Has some maps, locating the property. It has a site plan. It has a building plan, room, floor plans, and some information on the different services provided. Exhibit P3 has our overall value recommendation. And you can see there's a picture of the property. This property was built in 75. Never been remodeled extensively. They struggle just to keep up with needed repairs, recently adding a new roof and things like that. But no upgrades have been made to the building. On page P3-2, you have the cost approach. This includes hard and soft costs. It also includes an entrepreneurial profit addition, which I know some jurisdictions don't add that, but we do think it's appropriate, so we add that. Then we get a estimated reproduction cost, replacement cost of $7.7 million. Based on the 45 and 50 year estimated life of the facility, 45 for the memory care, 50 for the assisted living, and the current effective age of 44 years, since there have been no major structural upgrades or renovations in the life of the property, we have an estimated percent good of 23% and 30%. Which gives us our overall value after you add site improvements and land value of $2,441,070. And that's on page P3-3. You've got some supporting charts that go with the cost approach following that. And then you get into the income approach. We did the income approach three different ways. The first way is to look at actual historical income. Now, this is what probably an investor would do. You know, what am I going to get if I buy this property? And that's on page P3-6. The main distinguishing factor here is that we use a lower cap rate, 7.5%, when we're capitalizing the actual income because there's less risk. If that's what the property is able to achieve, there's less risk that you will be able to achieve that. And that's why we used a 7.5% with the actual income, gave us a value of $2,068,000. We then did two different market-based approaches using a market cap rate of 8.5%, also using a gross income multiplier of 3.2. The support for those is later in the package. And those gave us values of $3.121 million and $3.551 million. And all of that is explained on page P3-7. Page P3-8 has all the historical income data, and I apologize for how small it is. We haven't figured out a great way to present that information so it's easy to read because there's just so much information. But you do have the actual operating statements included in the exhibit, so those are a little easier to read. Page P3-9 is our sales comparison adjustment grid. And the problem with the sales is twofold with this type of properties. One, you have to find the right type of property. So a skilled nursing home is not the same thing as an assisted living facility. And so first you have to find assisted living facilities, and then you have to find sales that are not bulk portfolio sales, because those are not really good indications of value for a specific property. And it was very difficult. I was able to find four sales in Eastern Washington, none of them great. They're listed on page P3-9, and the actual write-ups are in exhibit P5 in the back. They are the right kind of property, and they're older properties, and they give us a rough estimate of value that's kind of bracketed by the income and the cost approach, which does give me some confidence in that number of $2,878,000. As I said, you have exhibits. Exhibit P4 is data supporting our cap rate and our GRM, and our GIM, I should say.
Mr. Finney?
And expense ratios and things like that. And as I said, exhibit P5 is the sales write-up.
Mr. Finney, we have time.
That's our presentation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Finney. We have to give time to our assessor's office.
All right, good morning. My name is Nikki Morgan, and I think Mr. Finney did a pretty good job describing the subject property to you. So I would like to mention on the first page of our packet there under 4D that we did go and inspect the property. We were allowed to walk through with a facilities manager and did verify some information about the building that we did not know. We are recommending a new value of $3,731,100 due to the changes, the corrections made to the size and class of the building. So the assessed value is $5,099,300. Our recommended value to the board for decision is $3,731,100. And that's there on page one under 4D. So we were able to walk through, as I said. So this is the packet describing what we saw when we were there. We do have this classified as a home for the elderly, built in 1975. And you can see all the information specifics on the building on pages 4-6. Page 7 is a description of where we received this information. Our recommended value is strictly using the cost approach to value in our Marshall and Swift information. So the subject property is 52,519 square foot on 2.41 acres of residential lot zoned R1 in the city of Pasco. So upon inspection, we did find that in the past 2 years, the building has been updated with an entirely new roof, fire suppression system flooring, and the main shower room upstairs had a complete remodel done. Everything in it had been remodeled. So using Marshall and Swift, you can read through page 7. This is the meat of how we're valuing this property and the explanations from Marshall and Swift that describes how we do that. The main difference between our cost approach and the appellants is the depreciation. They're using 75% depreciation on the building. They're saying there's only 6 years left that they can really use this facility, and then the economic life of this building is gone, where that's very different from what we observed while we were there. Page 8 is a sketch, and 9 is the photo. And you've got some other information. We did include land sales to defend the land value that we have. Since it is zoned R1, we included R1 and R2, as well as some commercial lot sales that are there in the general vicinity, just to show what the differences would be and how we have it valued. So it's valued at $1.27 per square foot. And whether you're looking at residential at $535 average per square foot or commercial, it would be $847 a square foot. So either way, probably going to see an increase in that area here soon. Page 14 is the stats for the improved parcels in this, where this is located, the 100 area. Just indicates that the median assessment ratio is 90%, so our assessment level is 90% of sales prices in that area. We did include some sales of some similar properties in other areas, but again, our cost is, our valuation model is strictly the cost approach. So this was not used to value the property. As the appellant pointed out, this would probably include some business value and some intangible value as well. So would mostly like you to focus on our cost approach and how we value the property.
And I was going to ask, what rate of depreciation did you use? He used 75%,
yes.
You said, and what rate did you guys use?
So you can see it there on page 5. There's two different sections to the building, and they're both receiving 45% depreciation overall.
45.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Mr. Finney, did you have a rebuttal?
So one of the things that I think Ms. Morgan pointed out is that we really vary in our estimate of depreciation. We are looking at the age life and the life of the building. The county is looking at an estimate, not sure what it's based on, but this building is largely the same as it's always been. Yes, you do have to replace the roof occasionally. Yes, you do have to upgrade the fire suppression system when the state tells you you have to. You do have to, fix up your bathrooms occasionally. But there have been no major upgrades or structural changes to the building. And we think it's somewhat unreasonable to say that you have a building with a life of 45 or 50 years that's 45 or 50 years old and it has more than half of its life yet left. That would be indicating an effective life of maybe 100 years or more. Well, that just doesn't make sense to us. And so we have an issue with that. Marshall Swift acknowledges that you aren't going to ever get down to 0% good as long as the property's in use, but it does bottom out at around 20% when the full economic life has been met. The other thing that we want to point out is that because of the county's recommendation and some admissions that what is being presented is a mass appraisal as opposed to a specific property appraisal, we believe that changes the burden of proof from clear, cogent, and convincing evidence to preponderance of the evidence. I'm not sure that I think it makes any difference in this case because I think we meet either standard, but I do believe that what we're looking at here is a strict preponderance of the evidence standard given the circumstances. The other factors, I know the county's not relying on the comp sales, so I won't spend a lot of time on them, but those sales are not, while they are located in the proximity of the subject, they aren't comparable properties. They're parts of large portfolios. One of them is the sale of a partial interest in a property, in a portfolio of properties. And they, one of them is a skilled nursing facility. So they have many issues with those comparable sales. And I think with that, I've hit the major points that I'm about to hit.
Okay. Thank you. Nikki, do you have a rebuttal?
Yes, I would just like to refer you back to page 7, which does talk about the depreciation and what we found in Marshall and Swift. And we do believe that with the quality and the age of the building and the items that have been maintained and replaced, the effective age would be where we have it, and there's reason to believe that from Marshall and Swift. Whereas you maintain the building, its economic life is extended due to the items that have been replaced and maintained. As far as presumption of correctness, we had to visit the property 3 times before we were allowed to enter and inspect the property this year. And so it was information that we didn't have before, and I'm glad that we were allowed to enter the premises and correct our information, but it was information that we didn't have before. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Do we have any questions before?
No.
Anything else you'd like to add, Mr. Finney?
There was something I wanted to say, but now I'm not thinking of it. I guess not.
Okay.
I covered everything.
All right. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it. We'll take everything under advisement.
Thank you very much for your time as well.
Thank you. This closes our hearing. Did we hang up on?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I don't mean hang up on it, right. You know, end the conversation. I don't mean hang up.
But. Gotcha.
Oh, we'll place you down here at this end.
Okay. You can have the warm chair.
Yeah.
Yes, we met last year.
Yep. All right. Thank I'll you. Go let Brian know.
Good morning. Welcome to the Board of Equalization. We're going to just go ahead and jump right in. So today is still November 7th. The time is now 10:28. We're going to start with petition number BE 2019-14. Parcel number 118261122. Owners are Tyler and Joan Gilmore. We have Mr. Gilmore here representing himself. For the assessor's office, we have Brian Moneymaker and Nikki Morgan. This is a residential petition. The petition is scheduled for 20 minutes. The appellant and the appraiser will each have 5 minutes to highlight points of the evidence they have provided. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions from the board.
Good morning. Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Gregory Garcia, Joe Christ, and myself, Alicia Greenaway, chairman. Our clerk is Amanda Pearson. The board is quasi-judicial board, which means having to do with the powers that are somewhat extended judicial and those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st, the assessed year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you now to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
I do. I do.
Following the hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make final determinations. You will be issued a written decision, which you will receive within 4 weeks. Sorry, I lost my place. On that decision, you will, the decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeal, and the notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of that written decision. The board is in receipt of all documents provided by you in the assessor's office, and we have reviewed it all. The appellant will present your case first, and then the assessor will present his case. We'll begin with your presentation of your case. Mr. Gilmore, go ahead.
So thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to present today. So some quick background. So I've met both of them last year. Actually, we were assessed the previous year as well. And I went down and I presented what I thought was evidence, which were sales of three houses on our block in 2018. But what I found out was last year, it was the previous year, 2017, that they based their assessed value on. But they did work with me. And actually, Brian came out to our house, and we had been originally considered that the basement was completely finished, and it was not. It's partially finished. So we did correct that last year, and I felt comfortable with that. Then we received another assessment this year again, and the value went up even more. And so what I did was, what really triggered me petitioning this was that there's a comparable house across the street, which is about 2 years newer, is actually larger and candidly nicer than ours, that is assessed at actually a lower value than what ours is, both in real terms and then also square footage. So that's what sent me down this path. I looked at a couple other methods to assess our property. And so what I did was I did a comparable parcel across the street, both the assessed value and then a sale price that occurred 5 years ago. Then I looked at the sale price of comparable homes in our neighborhood over the last 5 years and the assessed value of those neighboring homes. The fifth method I used was to look at some published data from University of Washington, the housing market, which is what the Washington State Financial Office uses for their use. And then I looked online. Of course, there's Zillow and Tooele, I guess. They pull data from public records. Each of those six methods I looked at was a lower value in terms of when you normalize it to square footage than what the assessed value was. So what I said was, of those six methods I used, what I am petitioning is that the assessed value of the comparable parcel, which is the house across the street, using that value square footage, that I'm asking that our property value be adjusted down to $270,750. And I think that's in your application. What I tried to do actually was, I know that you have 20 business days to present additional evidence. I read that as 20 days and I missed the deadline. So I'm just speaking from the data that I have here. But I did put those six methods down. Once I put the petition in, I also received actually from the assessor's office, they provided me a report. And they identified what they thought were neighboring homes and their values. And so I went to that, and I think that's in your packet, hopefully, as well. And so what they've done is they've highlighted five different yellow highlighter homes that are in the neighboring area and their values. I would like to suggest, too, that if we use that method, the seventh method, which I think is reasonable, is that we add some homes into that. So for example, we have, they've highlighted one house on road 92, 24-20-92, and so I would suggest that if they include 24-20-92, that they also include 23-21-94, and so on. I have another one at 7706 Drady. I have another one at 8916 Drady. And so if we were to add those additional homes into the value, average all those, I come up with a value of $179.17 per square foot. So even using that data, it's lower than what my assessed value is. And just for reference, my assessed value, I believe, was like 194, I believe. So much higher. So at any rate, what I'm presenting here is that I took seven different methods, which I think are reasonable. Each one was much lower than what the assessed value was.
Okay, thank you. The assessor's office.
Okay, first of all, let's start off just kind of describe the property. It's a one-story with a basement. Like you said, we were out there last year measuring up the basement to make sure that was correct in the house. And the house is 1,805 square feet on the main floor, 1,693 square feet in the basement. And we've broken it out. You can see it in the sketch on page 8. You know, what's considered finished, what's considered not finished, or even partially finished. And so it also has a 440 square foot attached garage and an 896 square foot detached garage, and then it also has two wood balconies. So the first thing I want to emphasize is the size of this house. And the reason why I want to emphasize that is because it's important when you're looking at comparable properties that as far as how we value, how we come up with our value, we value them as similar like properties. So, and that takes me into how we actually looked at this house, or you know, how we value them. It is a one story with a basement, and so the sales that I use as an example are all one story with a basement. So, but I also want to mention this. Sales comparison approach with direct comparable sales was not used to establish value. These sales were not adjusted for differences nor compared to the subject property to calculate the market value for the subject property. I show three sales as an example, and these three sales are all one story with a basement. They're all actually smaller than this house. Close, but still smaller. If you're going to compare them, if you're going to compare like values, that's how you would look at it. You would look at square footage and type. In this case, one story over a basement. And also the three that I'm showing here are within a mile of this property, which is within any appraisal methodology. You want to be within 6 miles. In this case, we're within 1 mile. And overall, in that area, I want to emphasize this as well. In the 211 neighborhood, we were at 97% in our ratio to the average sale price. So that's, I want to emphasize that, and also the price-related differential, which measures how we are according to property types, whether we're progressive or regressive, depending on the value of the properties. Means you're not over-assessing one higher properties versus lower properties. Okay, that's what that. And we're at 1.00, which is well within the tolerance by the IAAO. As a matter of fact, it's pretty close to right on. The tolerance for the International Association of Assessing Officers is between 0.98 and 1.03, and we're sitting right at 1.00. So in closing, based on the information that I in the packet and what I've just presented, I ask that you sustain the value.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Gilmore, do you have a rebuttal?
I do, thank you. So of the points, let me start with the first one, the size of the house, similar properties. I would suggest that what I used in the neighborhood were all on the same size lot, just under 1 acre. They're all single family. There are some basements. Some have our split level. Some have second levels. We are all comparable, I would say, for size. Now, the house across the street from me, which I used in my first method, is actually probably one of the larger homes on the block, and it is about, I would say, 3,000 or so square feet compared to our 1805 on the first floor. So I would say that the differences are calculated, are actually kind of baked into our neighborhood. Our neighborhood is very similar, and I wish I would have had a chance to give you the packet, but what I did was I looked at all the houses within one block. And so to the, Brian's second point on three sales within the area, I looked at each one of these. I know it's difficult to see, but the red highlight are the sales over the last 5 years. There have been actually three houses on our block that were sold last year. And in the evidence that they provided, they picked three of those five. I would suggest that if you add those other five in, the assessed value is still lower. So what I did was I looked at what they provided as evidence, the three houses, plus the additional two that aren't included in his example. And it comes out to be about $179 per square foot. On the other point, in the 211 neighborhood, the 97% ratio, that's the assessed value over the sales value, I would question that. What I'm questioning is really their assessment, so I don't know if it's appropriate to use a ratio that uses the assessment. So, for example, the comparable house across the street, its assessed value is still much lower than what ours is. And if you look at a sales price back 5 years ago, it would come out much, much lower than that 97%. I don't have it in front of me, but it's in the 80 percentile range. So I would also contest his third point on the method that they use, that we're all within a 97% ratio. We're not. And you can actually see in their other evidence on this sheet here, kind of the range that it goes. It goes all the way from 0.8 up to over 1.1 or so. Huge variance in here. So again, what I would want to do is focus in, and which I've done with those five houses, on our block, all within a block, either on our particular block on Richardson or on Drady, the next road over.
Thank you. Brian?
What I want to focus on is the fact that we are a mass appraisal, and we do it on a market-adjusted cost approach. So each home is valued according to its year built, its size, its condition and quality, and land size plays into it. All that stuff does play into it, but we are a market-adjusted cost approach. We don't look at the average, overall average per square foot. We don't, that's not how we do it. And then lastly, the properties that he does show, only one of them is an actual one story with a basement. Actually there's two, but they're smaller. So, and, another one that he gave, is only a one story. The final one that he gave is actually a one story. It's a little bit larger, but it doesn't have a basement, and it's older. So you know, overall, the way we look at them is a cost approach, and then we market adjust for all properties and what they're selling for. But if you break it down even further, just showing, just giving the examples that I showed of the one-story over basements. Those are just examples of like properties, and they're well within what we have valued his property for. They're actually smaller, too. Not one of them is as large as his, but they're one-story over basement, similar to his.
Does any of the board have questions?
I do. Mr. Gilmer, the five houses that you used for sales?
Yes.
Were those age-corrected for the date of sale, or did you just use the sales price?
I just used the sales price. Okay. Right. And however, if I may, three of them are older, and two of them are newer. And so, they kind of averages out. So, for example, the two that are newer are probably, one is 2 years newer, and the other is probably 5 years newer.
Age-corrected is based on the date of the sale compared
I'm sorry.
Increases in price over each year.
Yeah. Okay. So there were three houses on our block in 2018. Okay. Two of those are included in their example. They're missing one of those. I included the other two that were within a year of that. So it was within, 2017.
And then the value that you're comparing to across the street is the assessed value?
So I did it both ways. The assessed value, which is much lower, and then there was a sale 5 years ago. And that's also lower on a per square foot basis.
Okay. Okay. I don't have any other questions.
Anything else to add, Mr. Gilmer?
If I may, am I allowed a double rebuttal? I'm sorry, but to Brian. So I don't think you can have it both ways as far as either you're going to include size or not. And I think the way we do that is we normalize it to a square footage basis. And then, statistically, you have to include all of those in a bunch. And that's what I'm doing, really, with that neighborhood. And I think it's reasonable to look at it in that neighborhood as collectively and include what they've included plus the additional ones. And again, what I would suggest, if we did that with those five, it would be $179 per square foot.
Okay.
We'll
still have your
hearing.
Can we answer the phone?
Yes. Do you need me to answer? Okay.
Hello, this is Joe Chris.
This is Chad from Pivotal Tax.
Chad, can we put you on, thank you for calling in. Can we put you on mute for a moment while we finish up the previous caller?
Yeah,
that's
fine.
Thank you.
All right. Sorry. Okay, closing statement.
That's it. What I would recommend is that the assessed value at 193 that they have me at, an assessed value is high. And I'd recommend something more closer to 179 per square foot.
Okay. Brian?
We value them on a cost approach, market-adjusted cost approach, and it's based on year built, size, condition, quality. That is how we do it, and the value really depicts what sales are in that area.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Mr. Gilmer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmer.
Written hours.
20. Okay. All right. And we're going to run them together, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. So we actually have 1 minute?
Yeah, Penny's coming.
Yep.
Yeah, he called a little early. Thank you, Lord.
What did he say?
Chaz. Yeah.
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 I was more listening. I was just trying to figure out how to use the phone.
Use the phone. Answer the phone.
Yeah. I also don't have my copy of the document.
The red with the line through it?
Yep.
I don't want to hang up on it.
Yep. You won't.
All right. Chaz, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Perfect. And Chaz, may I ask your last name, please?
Standage.
And can you spell that?
Yeah. S-T-A-N-D-A-G-E.
Perfect. All right. So I'm just going to jump right into the hearing this morning. So it's November 7th. The time is now 10:51. Thank you for waiting. The petition number is BE 2019-38 as well as BE 2019-39. Parcel number 116160052 as well as 116160053. The owners are Pasco Associates, LLC. We have Chaz Standish over the phone here representing Pasco Associates. We have Nikki Morgan representing the assessor's office here today. This is a commercial property. We are allotting an hour for the petition. It is scheduled for an hour, and the appellant and the appraiser will each have 20 minutes to highlight points of the evidence that they have provided. The last 20 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions from the board.
Good morning. Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Gregory Garcia, Joe Chris, and me, Alicia Greenaway, as chairman. Our clerk is Amanda Pearson. The board is quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with the powers that are somewhat extended judicial and those of certain federal and state and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to provide or to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you to now affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
And before I do that, I just wanted the record to be known that we also have Peter McIndoe for our assessor here as well. So I'll now give that oath. Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Yeah, I do.
Following your hearing, the board will meet to weigh your evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and the notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all document data provided by you and the assessor's office. We have reviewed it. The appellant will present your case first, and then the assessor will present her case. Please begin with your presentation, Chaz.
Thank you. Okay, we did our evaluation, you know, of the properties. You know, we did them as an economic unit, but you know, one of them was just a small land parcel, so that's not really the one we're really concerned about. And we would even be fine with a no change on that one. The main, you know, the main parcel is the 116160053 is the one with improvements on it as well. So to go through our evidence, you do have, do you have our packet, you know, so you can follow along somewhat?
Yes, we do.
Okay. So on page two, we just have a summary there. You know, we have a cost and an income approach. The cost approach is our secondary approach, so I won't really focus too much on that one. And that consists of the majority of the pages because it has the CoStar report, so it takes up a lot of pages. But the one I'll focus on mainly is the income, which is coming in at, you know, just over $4 million in value. Right now it says that for 2020, it would be 9.3, almost 9.4. million. So page three is the property summary. It's year 2003. Building square foot is 55,788. The land acres, you got 6.09. And it is a shopping center. And page four is the breakdown of the two parcels. We have our Google map, you know, location of the property. The next few pages of GIS map, you know, the upslope, far away of the parcel. And then we come to our cost approach on page eight. And like I said, it's a secondary approach, so I don't really put too much time into this. We just did a basic shopping center at $88 square foot, a C-class average, and with the adjusted land, we came in at 5.6 million, just over that. We did attach the Marshall and Swift documents to show how we came up with those numbers if you wanted to review them. Those are the next few pages. And then we have the land sales. So you can look at those. On page 13, we have our land sale, you know, comparables ranging from $4.96 to $7.74. We made some adjustments for size on those. The subject's land is coming in at $9.13. The ranges was, you know, I didn't realize there was another page. So the ranges on land sales were actually from $3.24 to the $7.74. And then the next pages are all, you know, the CoStar reports of the land sales. And I don't really want to go too much into those. We can kind of skip forward to page, I believe it was 57, to our income approach. Page 57, we got our income analysis. And this is based on, we did receive on the next page, page 58, we received a letter from the client. You know, they broke down, you know, what the rent adjustment was on the property, and that's how we came up with our total monthly rent. You can see in the page 58 in the letter, you know, they have the new total monthly rent being at, you know, the $36,727. You can see that there. That's how we came up with that number for the total monthly rent. And expenses, we used 10% expenses, and vacancy, we put 10%. And the cap rate we used for our income, we did a 7% cap rate, and that was based on the CBRE report, which is on page 59, based on a C-class or a B-class. We got the 7% cap rate. And cap rate shouldn't be a huge issue. I think in the assessor's evidence, they had it as a C-class. And even if you brought the cap down to 6%, it still supports a decent-sized reduction from what the assessed value is. And page 58, like I said, it's a letter. They are saying the rental payment, this was effective 8-1 of 2018. And back in 2017, the property was only on, I believe, for around $5.5 million, somewhere around there. So it took a big jump from 2017 value up to now. And this is information we just received from the client, so it's new to us. You know, I don't know. I'm sure we appealed it previous years, but we just received this. You know, this is a new letter that we have from the client. You know, kind of tell them, you know, where this the mark, you know, the actual rent. Rental rate is now on page 58, and the CoStar or the CBRE cap rate study, page 59, and then page 60 is just our overview. So like I said, cost, I'm not putting too much weight into. We did throw it in there. The income, we do believe, does support a reduction. We have it at just over $4 million. The set value right now is 9.3. So I believe there is some room there for a reduction to on this property. That's where I'll conclude.
Okay, thank you very much. Nikki?
Hi, my name is Nikki Morgan. I'm just going to sort of walk through my packet here. I would like to start with the parcel ending in 052, the pad site on Road 68. So this is the smaller parcel just out in front of Yokes. It has its own leasehold improvement on it. So the building is not what we're talking about right now. It's just the land that it sits on. So it's 0.53 acres, zone C1 on Road 68 in Pasco. Page 4 is just a breakdown of the square footage of the property. 5 is the aerial view of where it sits there on Road 68 with its access, and it sits in the parking lot of Yokes. Page 6 is the stats from the area for land values on the road in the Road 68 corridor. Just notice that the median assessment level is 71%. So this is an area of Pasco that has been seeing significant increasing sales prices every year, and we are struggling to keep up. But I do have some specific sales to speak to on page 7 that are in the direct vicinity and closer to size of the subject than the appellant's sales. So the two subject properties are there. We're speaking to parcel ending in 052, the 0.53 acres. So it's valued at $16.80 a square foot. It is a pad site just there next to Yokes. You can see that the recent sales prices range between $8, and that was a bargain and sale deed, all the way up to $27.46 a square foot, and that's one that's directly on Road 68. Our assessment levels of these specific sales, our ratio is 62.98%. The map is on page 8 of where these specific parcels are sitting, and I'd also like to point out that there's another Yokes pad site in Richland off of off of Keene, which is a similar area, but different in that Keene is a long corridor with residential subdivisions and not a lot of commercial in this area, but it does have a Yokes and it is increasing. You can see on page 9 the land around it is still vacant, a lot of desert brush there. But this pad site and other pad sites outside of Yokes, there are 6 different sales, and they range between $8 and $49.16 a square foot, depending on which one you're looking at. So the one there on the corner, sale number 1, which is where Dutch Brothers sits, it's going to be outrageously high. The other ones are probably more comparable, and they're dated, so they're back from 2014 to 2018. But just like to show that these pad sites carry a higher value per square foot than the larger parcels. You're able to get direct access right off of your main corridor. So I will move into the parcel ending in 053, Yokes itself and its parking lot. It is 5.56 acres, also zone C1 in the city of Pasco. Contains a 47,461 square foot average quality supermarket that was built in 2003. And we did inspect the property in 2016, remeasured everything, verified the condition of the property. We've walked throughout and verified all of the characteristics that are referenced on pages 4 through 6. The sketch is on page 7. A photo on page 8, and then your aerial view on page 9. Again, I'd like to point out that on pages 10 and 11, speaking to land of direct vicinity and zoning in the Road 68 corridor, our median assessment level is 71%. So looking at specific sales on Road 68, you know, our level is at 62%. And the price per square foot on Road 68 corridor is going to be much higher than some of the appellant sales, which are all over Pasco. So the map on page 12, I think, sort of reiterates that. Our subject parcel is in lavender, comparables in blue, in the direct vicinity on Road 68. Page 13 is really where we get into the meat of the valuation here. We are valuing the subject parcel there, the first parcel referenced, at $121.29 per square foot. That's with the land removed, so that's just valuing the building itself. We do have some sales of properties that are right here in the area. The map of these sales that I'm referencing is on page 15. So three of them are right there next to the subject. Shopping centers, medical office, and a light industrial manufacturing. So again, this speaks to the market of the Road 68 corridor. You can look at our assessment levels and the price per square foot that these comparables are selling for compared to the subject. We were also notified of the Richland Albertson sale that I consider very comparable to the subject property. And it sold in June of 2019 for $13,018,272, which is $213.50 a square foot when you extract the land value of Brent County's land there. So very relevant supermarket sale on a...
Which Richland Albertsons?
Off of Gage and Leslie. Yeah. And it included two parcels. It did include a land parcel, the large parking lot parcel out in front of it as well. So that's why I feel like extracting the land and just talking about the valuation and price of the building itself is relevant. So I've extracted Benton County's newly updated land values for those parcels. And that puts the building at $213.50 a square foot. And you can see we have the subject valued at $121.29 a square foot. So I feel that that's very relevant to point out the market of our area for supermarkets. There are pictures of the comparables that we had spoken about on pages 16 and 17. These are the ones that are located right there next to Yokes off of Road 68. So again, price per square foot and location are all very relevant. I'll let you look through those. Did want to point out that page 19 and 20 is the real estate excise tax affidavit of the sales of that the appellant is trying to use in their sales comparison approach. We've pointed this out in previous years. It's a percentage interest sale, which is all referenced there for your review. Going into our income approach on page 22, similar to the appellant's income approach, in that we're looking at potential income that could be brought in from leasing the building, 5% market average on vacancy and collection loss, and 5% for other expenses. Our capitalization rate is loaded with the tax rate because we exclude taxes from allowable expenses. So 8.48% was used, which indicates a value of $9,173,000. There's some supporting documentation there of leases of other large buildings off of Road 68. So I don't know if you can read the pages, page numbers there, just after the income approach, pages 23 and on. So there was a 12,000 square foot neighborhood shopping center site available. And so this is where we base our income approach, income potential off of income questionnaires that we've received back, appraisals of similar properties, and also listings that are available on the market, which are all included there for your review. There's quite a few pages of those, so I'll let you review them. Would like to talk about the lease agreement that we received that the appellant also put in there. Agreement. It talks about the lease terms with Yokes on the building. And just after that on page 42, a little bit of information there for you about participation leases. They're very difficult without the actual lease agreement to review, which we've requested multiple years now and have not received the specifics of the wording in that lease and benefits that Yokes may or may not be receiving through the specific participation lease that they have as to why their lease amount per square foot may be so low and other benefits that they're receiving. Without that lease, there's not a lot that you can't weigh it that heavily. We're going to look at the market and what would a typical lease be for a building of this size and location.
Okay.
you have anything to add on participation leases, Peter?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Just going back to the income approach, just very briefly looking at past cases that have been filed, looking at 2018 on the Yokes building, you know, I know it's not much, but occupancy and vacancy were estimated at only 5%, now they're 10%. And expenses are now 10% instead of 5% that's been used in the past. Imagine with the same tenant, same market conditions, those would be fairly consistent numbers. We've been using consistent vacancy and expenses in our approaches over the years, regardless of the appellant's appeals.
Chaz, do you have a rebuttal?
So with our income, you know, you can adjust, even if you adjust the expenses and vacancy, you know, some years are going to be, you know, it might be fully occupied, some years it might be, you know, half, you know, it's just, even if you adjust those numbers, there is still, there's room for a reduction there, and, you know, the market comparables that you're using, it looks like they're, you know, they're just advertisements. You know, I don't know how much weight you can put into those, you know, marketing advertisements. And then the ones that from LoopNet, it looked like they were smaller offices. So, I'm sure the rental rate for those are going to be a lot different than a market center. The letter we got from the client, you know, that what they're telling us is what they're actually, you know, the monthly rent. So we're putting that in as the actual rental rate, just because that's what the client is saying that they're actually making for the month. You know, so I don't know, you know, I could have pulled some, you know, I could have tried to pull some advertisements and whatnot, but, you know, I believe that, you know, there should be some way put on the actual, you know, rental rate there, you know, monthly rental rate, you know. So that's really the only you know, you can even adjust the cap rate, you know, and it still supports a reduction from what the set value is. I just, you know, overall, we do feel that there is room for a reduction on this property. You know, even if it's not down, and I don't expect it to go all the way down to the $4 million that our income is showing, but there is room there for some type of reduction, especially given the fact that back in 2017, it was down toward, you know, $5.5 million. You know, so there was a $4 million jump in just the last few years. So that's all. That's all I really got.
Okay, thank you, Nikki. Rebuttal?
Yes, I just think that our packet stands for itself. There's a lot of information there for you to review. I would like to reiterate the Richland Albertson sale at $13 million. It's 51,000 square foot building, so smaller than the subject parcel. We have it valued at 5.8, and it sold for 13 million. We feel alternatively that this area is going to continue to see increases in assessment to try to keep up with 100% of market value. We ask that you sustain the value.
Board, do we have any questions?
I think follow up. I agree with the appellant on this point that you can change all the variables in the income approach, and it's going to change the number at the end. What you input will change the output. The other thing is, too, looking at that lease letter, I think it kind of gives you a glimpse into the complexity of the lease that's probably on this property might give you some. It gives us concern that the rent that the property owners receiving is not reflective of the market rent in the area. And that could be due to the conditions of the tenant, the lease, those kinds of things. That's a management decision. We're looking at market rent for that building.
Board, do we have any questions?
No, not for me.
Do you have any closing statements, Chaz?
No, just say that, like I was saying, you know, I believe that there is, you know, room for a reduction here. You know, I don't, you know, unrealistic. I know it's probably not going to go down to the 4 million, but I do believe that there is some room there for reduction, you know, to help relieve this, our client here. And I'll close with that.
Nikki or Peter, any closing statements? Okay, this will close our hearing. Amanda?
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
I've never done this, so I don't know what ready is.
Welcome to the Board of Equalization. We're going to go ahead and get started. Alrighty. Time is now 11:50, so I'm going to just jump right into the hearing. So we're starting with petition number VE 2019-25. This is parcel number 116160081. Owners are Ike Meyer and et al. We have Mr. Mark Sullivan. Is that correct? Okay,
that's
I
want
to
true.
Make sure. Perfect. Representing the party today. We also have Nikki Morgan, chief appraiser, and assessor Peter McIndorfer representing the assessor's office. So this is a commercial petition or parcel. The petition is scheduled for 20 minutes. The appellant and the appraiser will each have 5 minutes to highlight points of the evidence they have provided. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions from the board.
Good morning. Welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Gregory Garcia, Joe Chris, and myself, Alicia Greenaway, chairman. Our clerk is Amanda Pearson. The board is quasi-judicial body, which is, means having to do with the powers that are somewhat extended judicial to those of certain federal and state boards and commission. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessed year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. The clerk will ask you now to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
I do.
Following your hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and the notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documents provided by you and the assessor's office. The appellant will present your case first, and then the assessor will present her case. Please begin with your presentation of your case, Mr. Sullivan.
All right. Well, I guess we all know why I'm here, is I think that the property is, we're paying too high a taxes on that property. It's overvalued. And the only logical conclusion I have is that the fact that we had it on the market for a couple of years, 2 years ago, and I didn't even know that, but Mr. McIndorfer brought it to my attention that I was asking $7 a square foot online for it, and I didn't even know that, so I hunted around. I found the guy that had it online, Dennis Kesey, who happens to be kind of an associate, and anyway, he says, yeah, I had it on there, you know, at $7, and anyway, long story short, over a 10-year period, we had two phone calls, and one of them was for $3 a square foot, and another one was from Charlie Grigg for $4 a square foot. And that's it, you know. Nobody came close to $7, and especially not $8.40, which I thought was kind of, I don't know, how do you explain that? $7 was way too high, so $8.40 is better. So anyway, that's kind of the, in a nutshell, where I am, and I think the comparables and the formula that they use, looking at the map that I received, most everything on there are frontage lots with 25,000 cars a day, and that thing is trapped in a dead-end situation back there that a few cars sneak out of, coming behind the movie theater. I don't know if you you're interested in seeing the map of it. You may have it already there. Okay. So anyway, it's a dead end. And until, and if Wrigley were to come through, that would probably change the dynamics considerably, you know, as far as traffic count, cars. Because as we all know, commercial is all based on visibility and traffic count. And I know that the formula that the assessors use, maybe it doesn't get to take into account the little hidden details. You know, I mean, the formula plugs in the properties and spits out a number, you know, based on, maybe it does take into account traffic count and visibility. And but everything I saw on the map, with the exception of possibly one parcel north of Walmart, the blood bank, or whatever they are, that one's closer to the size of this 5.6 acres. Most everything else I saw was 1 acre, pad sites with frontage on Burden and Road 68. Anyway, I don't know. I was supposed to go apples to apples. That's what my leading comment was going to be. This is supposed to be apples to apples. Well, it's hard to come up with a lot of apples around there that even look like mine. You know, that's all I have to say, really. I think. I'm sure I can find something else. I'm going to get a shot at this, right?
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Nikki?
Okay, thank you. I'm going to begin on page one of my packet. So the subject property is 5.63 acres, zone C3 in the city of Pasco. As Ethelyn just pointed out, it's off of Road 68, so not strictly fronting it. There is a breakdown of the land and how we value parcels in Franklin County. But if you go to page 5, it's the aerial photography image of the parcel outlined in yellow. So it sits on the corner of Wrigley and Clemente Lane, just one parcel back off of Road 68. Page 6 is some statistics from this area, the area we call the Road 68 corridor. Sales, time-adjusted sales from 2014 to 2019 indicate that our median assessment level is only 71% of recent sales prices. This is a fast-growing area where we've seen sales prices increasing significantly over time. And there are some sales listed, these specific sales listed on page 7 for your review. The first parcel on the page is the subject property, which is 5.63 acres, being valued at $8.40 per square foot. You do have some similar properties there in size. There's a map which indicates it a little better visually on page 8. So the subject property is in Lavender, and as the appellant pointed out, most of these in this area have already been developed down into smaller size lots, so it is hard to find apples in apples. But when there are sales of similar properties, that is what we use to come up with 100% of market value. What would a willing buyer, educated and willing buyer, pay for this piece of property? So, on Wrigley Drive, just across Road 68, so frontage on the same street, Wrigley, is the Plasma Center parcel, ending in 070. So if I flip back to page 7, that's the parcel that sold in 2017. 1.22 acres. It also, I'm sorry, it's number sale number 9, ending in 070. 3 acres. Sold for $8.21 per square foot in 2016. So when we time adjust that forward, that value per square foot, of course, would go up because each year we're seeing an increase in the market value.
So if I, could you explain that ratio column?
The ratio column is current assessed values compared to old sales prices. Okay. So you would expect our ratio to be over older sales. That's where you're seeing the 107, 117%. These are sales that occurred in 2015, 2016. So this is not a time-adjusted column. This is just what did it sell for, and what is our value today? What is our ratio? You would expect us to be over on old sales, and you would expect us to be, according to state statute, 100% of a recent sale. Recent sale meaning close to January 1st of 2019.
Okay.
There's more information on page 9. The subject is outlined in red, and that plasma center sale outlined in the bluish teal. So prior to development, one of the appellant's concerns was that it doesn't include sidewalks and an extended width of the street, that there would be some development costs to anyone coming in there that the city would require. This comparable sale that we're using and looking at from 2016, the 3-acre parcel, it also had those barriers to entry. As you can see, prior to development, the street width was narrower, it didn't include any sidewalks, and they had to overcome those. So they knew that when they purchased that property at that price. And then you can see during construction of the plasma center, during development and construction, then the street is widened, sidewalks are installed in front of that parcel. And so I feel like the barriers to entry and the development costs were taken into consideration with the purchase of that sale. We consider that to be the most comparable sale that we have referenced here. When we do value parcels, especially commercial parcels on a main arterial, we do value them differently compared to whether or not they actually have the Road 68 frontage, how far back they sit from frontage, whether or not the side streets continue through. And so if you look at value per square foot of something on Road 68 or a corner on Road 68, it's going to be valued much higher than the subject property.
Okay, do you have a rebuttal?
Well, I guess, that's why I say I thought it was kind of futile to even come in. You know, you can't fight City Hall. So, but I'm just going off of the logic of the reality of two phone calls and two offers, even if it's not being, what's the word, when you're actively marketing something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't actively marketing it for a long period of time, and at this point we aren't, unless there is a website out there that is offering it now. I don't know. So anyway, I wouldn't even have known it was being offered until Peter told me. So just the fact that, you know, two phone calls, one offer for another piece that touches the back side of it, kitty corner, in other words, at $3, and then Charles Griggs just wanted 2 acres of it, rather deep, at the intersection of Clemente, because I think he had the foresight to see that potentially Wrigley will go through, and which will change everything. I know there's a lighted intersection up there, and they want to relieve some of the pressure off of Burton, and then it will change things there. So had Wrigley been in, if it were in place, and the traffic count were there, for that large a parcel of ground, I could see the justification of 840. Well, right now, just with the two phone calls I've had, it's closer to $4. That's my only rebuttal.
Okay. Nikki?
So the definition of market value is what a willing and educated buyer would pay a willing and educated seller, unobligated buyer and seller. It also assumes reasonable marketing time. This parcel has never received the reasonable marketing time when it was marketed. And we do track listings to see what's going for sale and what people are asking, also so we can watch for parcels that have sold. And when we did see that it was listed for a short amount of time at the $7 a square foot, not something that we would consider reasonable for a parcel like this. So to have received 2 phone calls without it being marketed is actually pretty impressive. This is people feeling out the market. But in order to consider that and use it to establish market value, if it had been reasonably marketed and it wasn't selling at a certain sales point, we would definitely look at that. But it hasn't been.
Does the board have any questions?
Well, just some clarification. Your property's for sale, but you don't know it?
Can you explain that to me? If that fall back on the old line, everything's for sale. I mean, in a way, that's right. And so there's going through the 07 and 08 downturn, and you start to, I myself personally, I think, okay, if I sell, let's say I sell everything I have, and I turn it all into cash, and now what are you going to do? Right? When all I have is some farmland down there, thank God we're still farming some of it there, but it's like, it's a great investment hanging on to it, and if I turn it into cash and go try to find something to replace that with, and which kind of, I guess I shoot myself in my own foot right here, because it is obviously increasing in value. But that's my quandary, is if the right offer comes along and the timing is right, it's, let's just say hypothetically Wrigley were punched through and it got a lot more traffic, and I could actually get I'll sell it to you right now for $8.40 all day long. In fact, I would have sold it gladly for $7. There comes a point where I'm worried about being, you know, taxed so much that, okay, now I have to sell it. And this also bleeds off to another point that I wanted to make on Wrigley there, with the Wrigley going through, and we have another parcel slightly north of that that's being farmed right now, so it's still in open spaces. And if I take that out of open spaces, it's going to directly affect another piece of property that I have that's currently being farmed, and then it's going to hit the magic $8.40 on 17 acres, which then, if I can't, I mean, I'm finding it hard to afford. I don't even know what the taxes are 100% on this 5.6 acres annually. I'm just guessing. If it's valued at $2 million, is it 1%? What's the tax rate now? The
tax rate's about $10 in the city of Pasco per $1,000, so yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically, it's costing me $20,000 a year just to pay the taxes on this 5.6 acres. And if I take that out of open spaces over there and allow an apartment complex to go in there, which is what's on the table right now, at $3 a square foot, then I lose the open spaces on the next 18 acres or 17 that I have behind Maverick. I couldn't stomach that. That'd be $60,000 a year in taxes. As I sat there waiting, hoping for a big box to come, and then, of course, in case you haven't noticed, the big box thing has dried up, right? I mean, everybody's buying things online now. So, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond, or Ross's Dress for Less, or many smaller boxes, they're not showing up. The big boxes would have normally come out there possibly by now and said, hey, we'd like to put something in here. You know, so we'll take your 5 acres or 10 acres, and we'll put a nice store in here. But even those guys won't pay more than $4 or $5. Mm-hmm. Gosh, they'll never touch $8. So I guess my point is, as I ramble on here, that I can't even afford to take my open spaces out for fear of it ruining me. I mean, financially, I'll have to service that or immediately have a sale in place for somebody to take that 18 acres. Unless I can move my water over and keep the behind Applebee's going, right, Randy? Anyway, Randy's a partner on some other ground.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
I think the market speaks for itself. I think the fact that we have property selling for $24 a square foot on the corner of Road 68, $27 a square foot closer to the freeway on Road 68, that $8.40 a square foot just one parcel back off of Road 68 is more than substantiated from the market.
All right. No other questions?
May I add one thing?
Sure.
The Spokane Teachers Credit Union, mm-hmm. Those guys are so highly leveraged. I mean, you know banks. They can do whatever they want. Kind of like, because we're using somebody else's money. That's why. But anyway, that's all I have to say. Okay. Thanks for hearing what I had to say.
Okay. Well, this closes the hearing then for today. All right. Thank you for your
All right, so the time is now 12:37. Chair Alicia Greenaway is going to now read the decisions for the day.
BOE decision announcements regarding BE2019-18, parcel number 118-281-128. Petitioner name is Stephen Dean. Decision, there was a stipulation offered to Mr. Dean after the hearing on October 31st, 2019 by the assessor's office, and he accepted the offer. BOE decision regarding BE2019-37, parcel number 119290-055. Petitioner's name is Tri-City Retirement, LLC. The board decision to sustain the assessor's value of $3,731,100 following reason number 21. BOE decision regarding BE2019-14, parcel number 118-21, parcel number 118-261-122. Petitioner's name is Tyler and Joan Gilmore. Decision to sustain assessor's value of $354,300 is based on reason number 14. BOE's decision announcement regarding petitioner number BE2019-38, parcel number 116-160-052. Petitioner's name is Pasco Associates, LLC. The board decision to sustain assessor's value of $387,900 is based on decision number 3. Also, BOE's decision regarding BE2019-39, parcel number 116-160-053. Petitioner's name is Pasco Association, LLC. Board's decision to sustain assessed value of $9,004,100 is based on the following reasons. Number 3. BOE decision announcement regarding petition number BE2019-25, parcel number 116-160-081. Petitioner name Eichmeyer. Board's decision is to reduce the assessor's value from $2,061,500 to $1,840,600. Board's decision is number 19. And that adjourns our meeting.